Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bathsheba, a novel, by Jill Eileen Smith, narrated by Callie Bollier. Part 1. These are the names of David's mighty men. Among the 30 were Eliam, son of Ahithophel the Gilonite, and Uriah the Hittite. There were 37 in all. 2 Samuel chapter 23, verses 8, 24, 34, 39. Ahithophel was the king's counselor. Hushai the Archite was the king's friend. 1 Chronicles chapter 27, verse 33. And one said, "Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 3, King James Version. 1. Jerusalem, 994 B.C. Darkness curtained the sky, hiding the stars, sheltering Bathsheba in the inner courtyard of her home. She clutched the soft linen towel to her chest, shivering, while Uriah stood with his back to her, a sentry guarding her privacy. "Of course, you must do this, but hurry, dear wife." His mischievous tone heated her blood. Suddenly, the chilly spring breeze seeping from her bare feet to the rest of her robe-draped body didn't seem quite so cold. "Yes, husband, would you like to help?" Her tone teased him, and she took courage from his own playful manner. She had Tirzah, her maid, to pour the water over her head, but if he was in such a hurry to be with her... He turned to face her, his dark eyes pools of interest. She had never suggested such a thing before. Tirzah always helped her do this. It was a woman's place, a woman's ritual. Would his strict adherence to the law of Moses let him help her? Did she want him to? She pulled the robe tighter about her, watching him. He seemed to be assessing her question, and she knew him well enough to know he was thinking through every purification law and tradition to determine whether such a thing was proper before Adonai. "We would defeat the purpose, Bathsheba," he said at last, "though if Tirzah were not available to help, I am your husband, after all." Gentleness filled his expression, his eyes revealing how much he longed to do as she asked. "It is a sacred moment." She looked into his face as he took a step closer. "To remind a woman she is set apart unto God and for her husband alone." She placed a hand on his arm, seeing him warm to the thought. "The law of Moses, it would allow for such a thing?" He rubbed a hand over his beard, the thought clearly troubling. He worked so hard to obey the law. If only he could relax and not take every jot, every little word so strictly. But even after 3 years of marriage, she trod carefully in manners of the law lest she be party to his guilt. Guilt that was not worth the price of carelessness. "I don't know," she said at last, stroking his cheek with her hand. "Until we do, Tirzah will help me. I will hurry." She smiled at the relief in his eyes and moved quickly to the bronze basin he had purchased for her own private use. She set the towel on the stone bench beside it and slipped the robe from her shoulders, listening to his sigh. "I will ask Josedek in the morning." The lame Levite tutor Uriah paid to teach him the law would spend many hours seeking an answer to Uriah's question. She glanced at him, his back now turned to her, the well-muscled body evident beneath a tan linen tunic. He was an intelligent, handsome man, and she marveled at his constant questions, his determination to learn the ways of her people. "Are you ready, mistress?" Tirzah interrupted her musings, pulling her thoughts back to their purpose here. Distraction was too easy with Uriah nearby. The water in the basin sparkled with the night's chill, making her shiver again. Tirzah rested the jar on her shoulder, waiting. Bathsheba pulled the comb from her hair, letting the length of it fall to her back, the thick tresses covering her like a cloak. She stepped into the basin and knelt, the frigid water prickling her flesh. She sucked in a quick breath as Tirza poured the first stream of cool water over her head. She took the hyssop from Tirza's outstretched hand and rubbed her arms and legs, then wrapped both arms about her, bracing herself again. Tirza lifted the water and poured a second stream over Bathsheba's head until it touched every part of her body. The shock of the cold and drenching water caused her to look up, to gaze heavenward. Her heart constricted with this gentle reminder of her need to be pure before Yahweh, something she could not do during her time of uncleanness. She bowed her head, praying her humility would grant her favor in his eyes. Would her night in Uriah's arms bring about the child they both craved? She closed her eyes as Tirza poured the water a third time. Shame filled her, her heart as bare before the Lord as her glistening skin. O Adonai, I am in need of you, a sinner at birth, unable to keep your perfect law. Wash me, and I will be clean, whiter than snow. The words, once a memorized tradition she had learned to quote by rote as a girl in her father's house, had become personal in recent months. A sense of unworthiness filled her, a stark reminder that her uncleanness must be atoned for. She let the last of the water drain into the basin and lifted shaky hands toward the heavens, tears mingling with the moisture dripping from her hair. Forgive me, Adonai. She knew a sacrifice must be given to know true forgiveness, but her heart longed for it just the same. Perhaps it would be enough to acquire God's favor this night. She stepped out of the bath and snatched the towel from the bench, drying her skin along with her tears. Slipping her arms through the sleeves of her robe again, she hurried into Uriah's outstretched arms. Bathsheba rose from the bed, careful not to awaken Uriah. He shifted at her movement, and she stilled, looking down on his contented form. His chest rose and fell in a slow, rhythmic pattern, his breath even and soft. The dark hairs of his neck curled beneath his night tunic and met the edges of his beard. She felt a blush fill her cheeks as she lingered, remembering, longing to keep him with her. But they had only two more nights together before he left again for many months. On the third night, he would sleep in another room, refusing any intimate touch in preparation for war, something she could never understand and could not bring herself to accept. The days spent marching to the place of battle should give him plenty of time to become pure. Why did he have to start before he even left her side? She sighed, felt along the wall for the clay lamp where it sat in its niche in the wall, then grasped it with one hand and slipped from the room. She padded softly through the dark halls toward the cooking room, where embers were banked in the clay oven, sufficient to spark a flame and light her lamp. She moved to the jar of oil and replenished the bowl to keep the light from going out. The lamp illumined the room where the servants would soon set the bread to baking and prepare the foods Uriah would take to break his morning fast. He always rose before dawn, ate quickly, then hurried to the tent where the ark stood, in time for the first trumpet sound. One more way he showed his devotion to Adonai. Or perhaps he thought somehow his actions would win the Lord's favor. Banishing the thought, she sat on the edge of the long wooden bench and rested her elbows on the smooth table, trying to stifle a yawn to no avail. She never slept well before Uriah left for war, and she couldn't decide if it was missing him that troubled her most or the fear of losing him to an enemy arrow. She searched her mind, wishing she could stop the fear, but exhaustion kept the worry always on the fringes, clinging when she wished she could release it like chaff blown away in the wind. What was wrong with her? Trouble sleeping again? Tirza appeared at the threshold of the cooking room, her own lamp in hand, her hair disheveled in a tangled mess. She stepped closer and took a seat at Bathsheba's side. She placed a hand on Bathsheba's shoulder, patting it softly. Tears pricked Bathsheba's eyes. Exhaustion made her emotional, something Uriah seemed at a loss to handle, so she'd taken to hiding her feelings from him when she could. He was good at drawing them out of her when the mood was right, when he felt especially considerate. Worried again? Tirzah stood and retrieved a flask of wine, pouring some into a clay cup. She handed it to Bathsheba and sat beside her. Drink. Bathsheba obeyed as she used to do when Tirzah had cared for her as a child, though the woman had not been all that old herself at the time her father brought her to tend his motherless child. She swiped her eyes. Yes, I can't seem to help myself. Tirzah smoothed her rumpled hair, then leaned an elbow against the table. I think it's time for you to be honest, mistress. Bathsheba's stomach fluttered, the sensation strongly resembling dread. Honest? You think I would lie to you about something? I think you would lie to yourself, to your husband. Me, you would avoid. She smiled, the lamplight casting strange shapes over her round face. Bathsheba turned away, not liking the direction the conversation had taken. I have nothing to lie about. She scanned the walls and ceiling of the room, listening to the scratching sound of field mice somewhere in the shadowed corners. Despite their efforts to keep the food high and away and the room swept, the creatures always managed to find some reason to invade the house. She lifted her feet beneath the bench on instinct, shuddering. I think... Tirzah paused as if weighing whether she should continue. I think... You are lonely, perhaps even angry. She held Bathsheba's gaze for a suspended moment. If I am lonely, it is only because he's gone more than he's home, and I have no child to take his place. Any woman would feel the same. She took another sip from the cup, feeling the warmth of the wine move through her. There are things you could do to fill his absence. The poor always need attending, and there are garments to be made. Perhaps your Aunt Talia could advise you. Tirzah leaned away from her, placing both hands on her knees. She might have something for you to do. My aunt can't keep my bed warm at night. I don't sleep well when Uriah is away. Tirzah's compassionate look made Bathsheba regret her sharp tone. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to snap. She toyed with her cup, then finished the last of the wine. My aunt also has Hava's child, soon to be children, to help care for, and Ray just married a wife, and they live with Aunt Talia. It is easy for her to feel worthy with so much to keep her occupied. You feel unworthy, mistress? Whatever for? Tirzah moved close to Bathsheba again, the lamp between them. Bathsheba shifted. The familiar shame filling her, adding to the emotion she could not hold in check. A married woman without a child? There is no value in such a person. What worth is my life, my marriage, if I cannot give Uriah an heir to carry on the Hittite line? I should be helping to build his house, not live as an ornament within it. She glanced toward the door to the cooking room and lowered her voice, though the hour was too early for other servants to be about. I fear he may take another wife if I don't conceive soon. He has his honor. Tirzah gave a disgusted grunt, but quickly looked about her as though afraid the walls had ears. The master is as much to blame as you, mistress. If you count up the months he is gone, they would amount to more than half of every year. How can he give you a son in such conditions? You know this. She muttered something under her breath. What did you say? Bathsheba leaned closer. Tell me. I would rather not repeat the word I used, mistress. She looked chagrined, and Bathsheba smiled. Men are all alike. They put the blame on the woman when they ought to know better. Bathsheba couldn't stop a soft laugh. In this, I will agree. But you know men would not begin to take the blame for such a thing. She set the cup on the table. Uriah is attentive, when he is here. She couldn't help defending him, despite her irritation. He was a good man, a loyal husband. A bit overbearing where the law was concerned sometimes, but nothing she couldn't live with. He was honorable to the core, and she respected him for it. Besides, it did no good to complain about war or to wish Uriah worked a trade instead of commanding a company of men always ready to do the king's bidding. She couldn't change Uriah or the king, or the ever-present need to do battle with Israel's enemies. What she wouldn't give for a solid year of peace. But that wasn't likely to come any time soon if her father and Uriah were to be believed. Tirza yawned. After the master leaves for the field, we will visit your aunt. Regardless of what you say, perhaps she can help. She patted Bathsheba's arm. I'm going back to my pallet. Try to rest. Bathsheba nodded, comforted by the servant's ability to take over and make sense of any situation. She watched Tirza walk away, the fear of loneliness not quite so tangible now. If she could have been completely honest with Tirza, she would have admitted that it was indeed the loneliness that worried her the most. She didn't want to end up a widow with no one to love her. Uriah did love her, didn't he? But his loyalty to her was not undivided. When the king called, he always answered. 2. The sun had clearly risen, the city fully awakened now as Uriah stepped into his courtyard, the memory of worship before the ark still fresh. He enjoyed the reading of the law, the reminder of all that God required of a man. The purification rites he accepted easily as well, but the daily sacrifices. He would never understand how the God of the Hebrews could accept the blood of a ram to pay for the sins of a man. If the man sinned, he ought to pay for his own sins. Still, were his sins keeping the God of the Hebrews from granting his wife a child? Was he paying for them in the loss of his first wife and now the barrenness of his second, or was Bathsheba's barrenness her own fault? The thought troubled him whenever the call to war drew near and her emotions grew frayed. Her tears made him weak, helpless, and with no way to comfort her. He had offered plenty of prayers and petitions on her behalf. What more could a man do? He crossed the court and entered the house, expecting to be met by his manservant Anatas, but it was Bathsheba who sat on the couch opposite the door, watching him. He paused as she stood and moved closer. When she drew near enough to touch, he took both of her hands in his. "You don't usually greet me like this." He gave her a smile, hoping to coax one from her in return. She offered him a weak response, her strained expression snuffing the effort. "I had hoped to spend time with you today." Her soft voice sounded uncertain, though the words were not spoken as a question. "We could go for a walk to the Gihon Spring. The brook is so lovely, and I thought..." She looked up, her gaze earnest, transparent. "I need you," she whispered. His heart stirred, as it always did when she looked at him that way. She was beautiful, beyond imagination. Not even the king's wives could compare. But Joab, the army commander, had called a meeting of the 30 to commence before the sun rose full in the sky. He glanced at the shadows along the wall. "There is not enough time. I'm expected at the palace soon." Her face took on an expression he couldn't quite define. "Is there time, then, to visit the market? I heard a caravan from Damascus has just arrived. We wouldn't have to buy anything." She looked at him then, her eyes hopeful. "What purpose is there in going to market if you have nothing to purchase? Surely a day's work was enough to keep a woman occupied without needless sightseeing." "For the pleasure of seeing new things from far away?" She quirked her head, a frown wreathing her face as though she thought he had no sense whatsoever. He studied her for a brief moment, then glanced at the shadows again. "We'll have to hurry." Her smile deepened, and a sense of relief filled her gaze. "Let me get my cloak." While her servant helped her into her cloak and sandals, Uriah walked to the back of the house in search of Anatas. "There you are." The old servant had been with him since he was a child, faithful through the deaths of his parents and his first wife. The man had understood Uriah's need to keep Bathsheba safe, lest Uriah suffer yet another loss.
"Master Uriah, how was your visit to the tabernacle today?"
Anatas tucked a clay tablet and thin stylus into a leather pouch at his side, then adjusted the cloak more securely about his neck.
"The visits are always the same, Anatas, you know this."
The man was shorter and stockier than Uriah, his thick arms strong despite his age, which was not quite as old as Uriah's father would have been, but old enough for Uriah to think of him as such. Bathsheba would be in good hands when he left for war.
"I am headed to your storehouse to give you an accounting before you leave,"
Anatas said as the two walked together toward the front of the house.
"Is there something else you need me to do today, master?"
Uriah stopped before they neared the courtyard where Bathsheba waited. Anatas turned to look at him.
"I am worried about my wife, Anatas. I fear her moods when I leave for war are growing worse with each passing year. She needs a child. Would that she had one.
Didn't God give life?
Perhaps a blood sacrifice would help. In the meantime, I want you to make sure she has plenty to do while I'm away. Don't allow her time to sulk."
"I'll do my best, my lord. But the servants cannot replace you. She grieves when you are gone."
Anitas's words stung. Did the man blame him for the work he did?
"I cannot stay home from war just to please my wife."
"Of course not, my lord. We will do all in our power to keep Mistress Bathsheba content."
Anatas glanced toward the courtyard, and Uriah followed his gaze. Bathsheba stood in the arch of the door, her profile stunning even beneath the folds of her clothing. He sucked in a breath. The woman was unaware of her ability to tempt a man. How had he managed to wed such a magnificent creature?
"There is nothing else. I trust you to oversee my household while I am away."
Uriah gave Anatas a dismissive nod, then took long strides towards the courtyard. Bathsheba smiled at Uriah's approach. He took hold of her elbow when he reached her side and gently turned her toward the street.
"Come."
He released his hold as they stepped onto the cobbled pavement and walked one step ahead of her. When they moved to a wider road, he slowed, motioning for her to catch up to him. He intertwined their fingers, then moved forward, his pace rushed. They walked in silence, past the homes of their neighbors until they reached the area of the merchants. The scents of camels and animal dung mixed with the aromas of exotic spices and honeyed sweetmeats. Bright-colored tapestries, ivory, copper, precious stones, silver-coined headdresses and striped shawls and scarves filled overcrowded stalls. Nearby merchants haggled with the caravan master for the best prices for their wares. Bathsheba let Uriah lead her to the side of the throng, taking in the strange markings and garments of the Damascus travelers. The men's hair and beards were short, their mustaches trimmed, unlike the Hebrews who did not shave the corners of their hair or beards. Interest piqued, she longed to move closer, but Uriah's hand at the small of her back propelled her down a side alley where the crowds were thin. He took her hand again and tugged her forward. She attempted to speak but could not concentrate on anything besides keeping up with him, making sure her feet did not stumble.
"My lord, please,"
she finally managed when he stopped at a bend in the road and had turned her to go back the way they had come. "Can we not stop to look at what the merchants have brought?" She wanted a moment with him to enjoy the sights together, but he seemed on a mission to get through the whole ordeal in quick progression. He looked at her and then glanced at the sky.
"I told you we didn't have much time, my love."
He bent closer and cupped her cheek with his hand.
"I'm sorry, but we have to head back soon." She nodded, not trusting her voice, not willing for him to see anything but pleasure in her gaze. Apparently satisfied, he took her hand again and moved them through the crowd. They reached the camels still piled high with wares, where a Bedouin was in the process of unloading one of the packs from the animal's side. A jewel-bedecked woman, in sweeping robes of black and red and yellow, moved beside the man, the fringe of her sleeves swaying as she lifted a leather pouch from his hands. She pulled a string of multicolored scarves from the bag and draped them across her arm, the fine linen appearing as soft as the petals of a flower. Bathsheba slowed, and Uriah caught her eye. He faced the woman. "How much?" He fingered a delicate scarf, and Bathsheba feared the threads would catch on his roughened hands. The blues and reds in varying shades were beautiful. "3 shekels."
"Too much."
Uriah released his hold and took a step forward.
"It is worth half a shekel, no more."
The woman touched his arm.
"The pattern is a work of art."
Bathsheba's breath held as he eyed the woman.
"1 shekel."
The woman's mouth quirked, but her sharp eyes held his.
"2. 1.5.
Done."
She pulled the scarf from the others and placed it in his hands. He turned and draped it over Bathsheba's head, smiling, then paid the woman and hurried on. She nearly tripped trying to keep up. When they were past the merchant's stalls, his pace increased, and she half ran, half walked until they reached the safety of their courtyard. He glanced at the sky, as though fearful he would be late, then bent to kiss her cheek.
"I must go."
He turned and walked quickly away.
"Back so soon, mistress?"
Tirzah's welcome voice soothed Bathsheba's frustration. What had she expected? She knew he could not, would not miss a military strategy meeting called by his captain, especially this close to war. Never mind that the men could strategize on the field all they wanted once they arrived. Why did Joab have to take up her husband's time when she had so little of it left? Tears blurred her vision. She grasped the scarf to dry them, then looked more carefully at the fabric her husband had spontaneously purchased for her.
"It's beautiful," Tirzah said, coming up alongside her.
"Tell me what it was like. Were the goods from Damascus so different from what we have here?" She guided Bathsheba to the bench and retrieved the water jar to wash her feet. Bathsheba sat obediently and pulled the scarf from her head, examining the fine work and the intricate leaf design, so small and delicate. She'd missed it from where she'd stood while Uriah bargained for the piece. The work must have taken much time to produce, many patient hours of stitching. Perhaps she could learn to duplicate such work.
"Your thoughts are far away."
Tirzah lifted her foot and undid the dusty sandal. Bathsheba looked at her maid, breathing deeply, trying to suppress her jagged emotions. "There isn't much to tell. Uriah rushed me through the stalls. We only stopped long enough to purchase this." She ran her fingers over the scarf again. "I had to almost run to keep up with him."
"You resent him rushing you."
Tirzah read her thoughts too easily. Sometimes the thought annoyed her, but the truth was hard to ignore. "I resent Joab for demanding so much of him. I resent the king for sending his men to war. I resent Uriah for always going." She glanced around her, relieved when she saw no other servants milling about. "Perhaps this war will end quickly." Tirzah used a soft cloth and a bit of soap to wash the dirt from between Bathsheba's toes. Bathsheba jerked and pulled back, wriggling her foot, both liking and disliking the ticklish sensation. "Be careful."
"Sorry,"
Tirzah smiled. She was 12 years older than Bathsheba, a pleasant-looking woman despite uneven teeth and a slightly crooked nose. Her dark hair was piled high beneath a plain, light brown cloth, and her sturdy hands had seen much use. You can hardly blame the king for declaring war on the Ammonites, not after what they did to his messengers, his own son among them.
"I know. I understand the need. I just
hate that Uriah has to be part of it all. Why can't...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?